¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Yeah. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. Yeah. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
It's time to turn off the lights and turn on the dark.
Chilling tales for dark nights.
Good evening, listener. You're listening to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights. On tonight's edition, we invite you to leave behind your safe reality and descend with us into the frightening depths of the most terrifying imaginations with an audio adaptation of frightening fiction about regrettable rides. I'm your host, Steve Taylor, and tonight I'll be your guide as we traverse the dimly lit corridors of your darkest dreams. Joining us tonight to help bring to life the frightening fiction of J.R. Hamatashin are voice talents Olivia Steele, Rissa Montañez, Paul J. McSorley, Nick Goroff, Eric Peabody, Danielle Hewitt, and Heather Thomas. Now, get your ticket ready, take your seat in our Theater of the Minds, and brace yourself. It's time to turn off the lights and turn on the dark. Our tale this evening is written by J.R. Hamatashin and performed by Olivia Steele, Rissa Montañez, Paul J. McSorley, Nick Goroff, Eric Peabody, Danielle Hewitt, and Heather Thomas. In it, we take a front row seat to a situation that can be all too real. This one has depictions of graphic violence and language, folks. So if that's not your bag, please feel free to check out one of our other shows for your enjoyment. And I'll see you next week. Now, without further ado, I present to you, quick question, do you love animals?
Amelia found the best way to get people to listen to her spiel. At first, the four of them, change agents all, stayed clumped together near the well-trod passageway leading from the Unisphere and the Queen's Museum of Art, where all the vendors were set up for the Discover Queens event. They had all struggled. People instinctively didn't want to be pitched to. Despite the training materials assumed, that included a cloying, quick question, do you love animals, or 1 minute can save a child's life. The animals question in particular often elicited cold-blooded responses from the typical rush hour NYC commuter. Some real insight into how people really felt about whales or snow leopards when they got between them and home. Amelia, Chanel, Yvette, and Chloe had all been hand-selected for the event, which sounded prestigious until Amelia remembered that despite the smoke management maybe blowing up their asses, she still wasn't special enough to actually be paid an hourly wage. If Amelia ever made it to a manager position, then she'd get an hourly wage. But given the approximately 95% turnover rate, the odds of becoming a manager were bleak. The majority of that turnover probably occurred on the first day, once the new hire learned this job was glorified panhandling. Maybe this was even worse, actually, as the average panhandler didn't have a poverty pimp to share his lucre. To make it in this gig, you needed to either be a true believer or some combination of extremely optimistic, charming, and/or persevering. Amelia was, at various times, all of them, but never at the same time, as the invigorating prospect of spending a full day out, far from home, with nothing to show for it, ineluctably crept to mind, and, like mental termites, chewed away the foundation of her ambition. Then that itchy shame would return, the shame of knowing she'd been bamboozled, and even if she had a great day at it, and made the best of it, she was still just making the best out of a fucked up situation. Chanel, endearingly zaftig, million wattage smile, her blackness and the white guilt it invoked in their targets providing her moral insulation for her intrusive questions. Even with all that, Chanel was struggling. Yvette, poised, lovely, tight-cupping shirt making her advantages even more advantageous, also struggling. Chloe, given the animal campaign, a rising college sophomore just like Amelia, but who looked no more than 16, allowing sympathetic ears to believe they were rewarding the earnest efforts of a precocious child who, with her big white eyes, sort of looked like a cute animal in desperate need of saving. She, too, was struggling. So far, today was a disaster. It was only after Amelia had wandered off from the group that she found success. She didn't even realize the connection at first, but by her lonesome, people, largely men, were stopping and listening to her. Men would glance at her, the quick up and down, and she'd return their gaze with an inviting smile. She'd then approach and make casual conversation, and then ease into the spiel. Only then did they perhaps realize that her backpack was for the clipboard she carried, which she kept hidden against her black pants until the spiel began.
So, do you get to take any trips to Africa? I've been to South Africa. It's absolutely beautiful,
said one man in his early 30s as she explained the Africa campaign.
I wish. That's so awesome. What part of South Africa did you go to?
And so on, with the man explaining all the beautiful sights and spectacle, with Amelia returning the excitement, always weaving back to the gestalt, to get him to donate. Why, he had first-hand knowledge of the conditions that persist in some of these villages in Africa. Yes, yes, he agreed. Although in reality, his experiences were likely confined to the resorts and guided tours of Cape Town. So many men asked to add her on Facebook, or Instagram, or Kick, and every other app under the sun. A few men, torn between wanting to ingratiate themselves with Amelia and worried they were being played the sucker, practically made Amelia's social media friendship a condition of the contribution.
You're not just playing with me, I hope, to get this sale,
one said jauntily, in a tone suggesting the thought was so ridiculous there was no need to say it aloud. Yet here was doing just that.
No, see? You can watch me add you. See?
Amelia pulled out her phone and showed him her acceptance.
And don't think of it as a sale. Not to be corny, but you are literally helping someone get access to fresh water.
Great. I donated to a good cause and I met somebody new. Can't ask for more than that.
Exactly.
Look forward to talking to you again sometime, Amelia.
Have a good day.
She struggled with rationalizing everything associated with this job. She sighed and told herself, yet again, that this couldn't go on. She either needed to reconcile herself with the uncertainty inherent in her position and the moral tension of working for a shitty, poorly run, exploitative organization that happened to be working for a just cause, or just leave. If they made her work on a minimum wage campaign, she'd have to quit. Working for an organization that lobbied for a higher minimum wage while simultaneously relying on independent contractor loopholes to pay her nothing was cognitive dissonance too great to bear. She quietly reintegrated herself into the rest of her group as they counted out by the entrance to the Queen's Museum, their supervisor Doug in attendance. The pimp collecting his pay from the charity hose, as Chanel had previously described. Although Doug, likely not even 25, and so coached in the restricting language of appeasing, conflict-avoiding institutional dogma that he confused these lessons with his own natural thoughts, would have made a sorry pimp indeed. There she is. She returns to us. We thought you had left us. The other girls laughed.
I gotta say, that was a really good idea, though,
said Yvette as she wrote something down on her clipboard. They all knew that comment was more for Doug than anyone else. Amelia found it funny that Yvette bothered to scribble something down to further the illusion for Doug's benefit that she cared one way or the other. She noticed that whatever Yvette had written, it wasn't a full sentence. What could she have written? Good idea to walk away from group, like she's going to go home and study her notes to become a better professional nuisance? Oh, was it a good idea, Yvette? Was it really? Amelia wanted to bait. She smirked coyly at Yvette, who smiled as if about to laugh, and then caught herself. She knew what was up.
So, Amelia, I heard you took the initiative to strike out on your own. We encourage all of you, in the right circumstances, to make those kinds of decisions for yourself. We always want to remind you, you are our eyes and ears.
And literally everything else, since we were the ones who do all the work, Amelia's mind filled in.
And we rely on you to get the results that our campaigns require. Tell us about that decision.
She wondered whether it would have been better just to stick with the group and not have to give this extemporaneous explanation. She should have known it was coming. Doug usually called on her to speak. He could hardly look directly at Yvette, afraid of being caught in the orbital pool of her avavavoominess. He didn't often call on Chanel because Amelia suspected he was uncomfortable speaking with black people. As for Chloe, who knows? Maybe her tinny voice and juvenile features grated on him. Amelia disliked being put on the spot or being made to speak in front of a group, especially when it was unanticipated. But you're so good at it, people had said to her, or, but you're so outgoing. No, nothing could be further from the truth. It was just that she was petite with dirty blonde hair and a button nose with a tiny silver stud. And when she was nervous or uncomfortable, she smiled or blushed or over-emoted to make sure that whoever she was speaking to left with a favorable impression, even if what she was saying was hot garbage. People filled in the rest of her personality with their minds and expectations, and men especially seemed to view her nose ring and her facial tics, her gesticulations like her ironically frozen smiles or deer-in-the-headlights widened eyes, as some calming, humbling signifiers of approachability, which, counterintuitively, resulted in more of these impromptu exchanges than she ever wanted.
I just saw an opportunity and went for it.
A pause, and Amelia gave a thumbs up, half obscured by her shirt to make her thumb seem even smaller, then offered a cheesy smile until someone did something.
Hear that? I just saw an opportunity and went for it. That's great. Remember that, everyone. That's exactly the attitude we hope to foster.
The meetings usually ended after Doug was able to elicit something that could be passed off as some kind of work lesson. As Amelia checked and rechecked her own intake, she got lost mentally in the grandeur of their settings. She'd never been to Flushing Corona Park before. The Unisphere, the stainless steel spherical representation of the Earth that dominated the park, surrounded by thin orbit rings that made it look like a giant cartoon isotope, wasn't done justice in her attempted cell phone pictures, which reduced and flattened everything. The other three girls, she realized, had skedaddled without saying goodbye. Maybe they hadn't wanted to draw any additional attention from Doug. She'd meant to see what Yvette was up to this weekend. She never actually hung out with her outside of work, but wanted to. Figured the long subway ride back together on the 7 train would be a good opportunity. Amelia looked around and didn't see Yvette. It was too late. She should take advantage of her surroundings here. She vaguely knew that Flushing had great Chinese food, but had no idea where to venture, or whether it even made sense. This park was massive, and the whole process of crossing it to get to Flushing proper would take forever. And it was already 5:30 p.m., and the lunchtime park vendors all seemed to be closing up.
And if she left now, maybe she could get back to Upper Manhattan in a reasonable time for dinner. 45 minutes or so on the 7 train through Queens to 42nd Street Port Authority, take the A Train Express all the way to Inwood, the last neighborhood in Manhattan. There's another 45 minutes or so right there at best. She wanted to Uber, but she knew she shouldn't. A good day's grifting wasn't a justification, she told herself. The point was to save up fun money, so she could go out and socialize like a normal college girl. She'd taken out loans, but her parents paid the remainder of her tuition and her rent. But that's it. But that's it, she heard herself snottily distorted in the most self-entitled voice possible. Oh, that's it. Just tens of thousands of dollars of tuition and rent in Manhattan. She thought it a mark of pride that she took out loans, which distinguished herself from most other Columbia students, but was instantly aware of how that self-aggrandizing would sound to anyone outside the Columbia bubble.
Everything worked out?
It was Doug, coming to collect her receipts.
Whoa! Great job, Amelia,
he said while shuffling through the documents.
Thanks!
Great job. Definitely beats rush hour down at City Hall or uptown near campus, right? I'll definitely make sure you get any of these special assignments or fares if you want them.
Thanks. Sure. Let me know and I'd love to.
Will do. Definitely.
When Doug made to leave, he looked back at her over his shoulder, like this impromptu thought just came to mind as he was leaving and... Aw, hell. Why not do her the favor and ask?
Hey, Amelia, you live uptown, right? Washington Heights or so? I drove here. I'm heading north anyway. I could give you a lift.
Doug? You lived in Westchester, I thought. I live all the way up in Inwood, near the Cloisters. I couldn't. That's sweet of you, but I couldn't make you do that. You'd have to drive all the way into the city.
It's really no problem. I don't mind.
Actually...
Amelia feverishly looked at her phone as if it was imparting life-saving information.
I had already ordered an Uber.
And she displayed just enough of the screen to show that, indeed, her driver, Major, was expected in 4 minutes.
Amelia?
Said a slender, fair-skinned man in his late teens or early 20s with a patchy, moss-like beard that appeared newly formed. He spoke out of the lowered passenger side window of his black Toyota Camry, license plate ending in 652.
Yep, that's me.
She had no idea why she said it so wide-eyed and zippily.
Major, right?
That's me. Okay, then.
Major's voice smoothly dropped an octave or two, hands shot to his face to rub and smooth out his beard. To Amelia, the movement appeared strangely self-conscious, like a kid covering up the target of a recent insult.
Oh, snap.
He said, opening his door as Amelia entered.
Forgive me, miss, I meant to go out and open the door for you.
No worries.
That may have been the first time she'd ever been called miss. As she put on her seatbelt in the passenger side back seat and threw her clipboard on the empty seat behind Major's, he turned his head and said,
Sorry if I called you miss. Probably about the same age here, and I'm calling you miss.
It's all good. You wouldn't happen to have an iPhone charger in here, would you? I'm low battery.
You sure do.
Great!
Amelia supposed there was a reason for that exultation, and she noticed that so far every time she over-emoted, he smiled self-assuredly, as if it was a verdict and reminder of his charm.
Let me take that for you.
Major shifted around in his seat and said, Here we go, as he plugged in the phone and set it in the phone stand just under the radio. He lifted it up toward his face.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
Plus, terms and conditions apply.
Ooh-wee. Nick of time. You're down like 5% here.
The area around the radio looked busy and complicated with contraptions.
Yeah, I was working all day out here, and you know how it is. Every couple of seconds, gotta check the sites like something's changed in the world.
FOMO. That's what's called FOMO.
He mistook her delay in responding as her ignorance of the term.
That's what's called fear of missing out. That's like the modern curse, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She nodded decorously. She knew what FOMO meant.
So I'm up in Inwood. Sorry if it's a long ride.
She was mildly curious about several things. How a New Yorker in his early 20s ended up saying, ooh-wee, whether his name was truly Major, and where this mossy-faced white boy obtained this strange, affected manner of speech. But not curious enough to tempt further conversation.
Right. Let's get on out of here. If it's okay with you, I'd rather not take the highway, you know, in case someone else needs to get picked up.
Amelia had compromised between her spendthriftiness and her eagerness to escape Doug with an Uber X, which offered a potential shared ride.
No worries.
She lied. She preferred to get home as soon as possible, but whatever. Amelia stared languidly out the window and wondered how much her phone had charged already. Up to 10% yet, maybe? She looked out the window, even if there wasn't anything remarkable to see. People, largely Latinos, made their way up and across the crowded sidewalks. Amelia tilted her head back as they passed a shop advertising Peruvian juices, straining to make out any of the ingredients and combinations on offer. She made out one description with almonds and banana called nut juice.
Me like them juices?
Amelia leaned in, not sure at first that she'd heard him, smiled instinctively, figured out what he'd said with context cues, and wondered if he'd seen the same sign.
Those Latin juices, man, they something.
I don't think I've ever had one. I like smoothies, though.
Like kale and spinach and stuff like that?
Well, not just that. You need to have peanut butter or dates to sweeten them.
She said, still leaning in.
Those smoothie places in Manhattan charge you an arm and a leg. Like you gotta take out a damn mortgage just to afford one.
He took care with his placement and emphasis on damned mortgage.
Yeah, I know. It's ridiculous.
Out in the boroughs, that's where you get the real stuff.
Yeah,
she said emptily. She didn't like how he seemed to take his eyes off the road whenever he began a sentence.
So, you a college student?
I am. A sophomore, well, soon to be one. A rising sophomore. Whether that makes me technically still a freshman or now a sophomore, not sure.
A frosh, huh?
I guess.
She'd never heard that expression and instantly concluded it didn't exist.
So, if you live up in Inwood, let me guess. Most of the Columbia kids live in Morningside Heights, what they used to be able to call Harlem. If you call that area Harlem now, Columbia University might come down and lock a fool up for that. You don't seem like a city college girl. So I'm still going to go with Columbia?
Well, it would be way too long of a commute for NYU.
She meant that as a joke, as NYU was all the way downtown, though she knew there wasn't much meat on that bone.
So I got it right?
You did.
Score one for me.
He was mercifully keeping his eyes on the road as he continued up the one-way stop-and-go side street up to Astoria Boulevard.
Quick question, Amelia. Did that nose piercing hurt?
This?
As she unthinkingly tapped her nose, as if there was any other nose piercing he was referring to. He smiled at her like she was a little puppy that just sneezed.
Yeah, that one. I trust that's the only one. I don't think you'd appreciate it if I pulled over the car and checked you more thoroughly for another one. Another nose ring, I mean.
As she spoke, he looked first into the mirror, then back at the road, and then quickly back to the mirror, eyes fixed, to see if his comment was taken in its intended good humor.
I've had it since I was like 15. I don't know why I got it, really. I was into music. I don't know. I just thought to get it.
Nah, it's cool. I dig it. I like it. It looks good.
He flicked the lobe of his right ear, highlighting the stainless steel stud earrings he had in both ears.
Music, you said. Sorry. I had the damn music off this whole time.
Major turned his speaker system on, and for the briefest moment, she heard a bass-heavy groove before it swiftly landed onto some country twang. He steadied his fingers on the dash, as if the music might change on its own accord, and bopped to the rhythm.
You like country?
Do I look like someone who likes country?
Well, I guess I can't think of any country stars without nose rings, but I'll say you don't look like someone who doesn't like country.
You mean a white person?
Hey, you said it, not me.
She wanted to immediately ask, so does that mean you like country too? But thought better of it. Amelia listened along to the guitar-driven tale of marital woe.
I don't really know much about it, really. I'm not, like, opposed to it. I just don't know much about it except what? That song that they play sometimes, like, anytime you go into J. Crew, they play it. What's it called? Whiskey Never Did Me, or something?
Whiskey Never Let Me Down.
Yeah, that one. I grew up in Baltimore. It wasn't really a country zone.
Major gave her an exaggerated side-eye in slow motion, cocked his head in a way that must have been derived from some The Hell She Say meme. She wished he'd just pay attention to the fucking road.
You? From Baltimore? Don't take this the wrong way.
He laughed, big aha.
But you don't look like you were from Baltimore.
She hesitated.
Baltimore County.
Oh, I see. I imagine that's suburbs, right?
Yeah.
Now the truth comes out. You tried to pull one on me. Baltimore, get out of here. I've never been, but I'm gonna count Baltimore County as the country.
He moved to the rhythm some more, but ceased as her attention focused on whatever lay out the window. If she thought about it, for some reason she liked that he liked country music. It was an earnest entreaty. She looked back at him and attempted to project warmth, or at least contentment. But his swaying had ended, and he stared ahead. Maybe she was projecting, but it seemed he was staring ahead dismally. She felt like she should say something, but didn't, and stared out the window.
That song was pretty catchy, actually.
To me, at least. It's more about the feeling behind the best country songs. It's like the best R&B or even gospel. Well, you really feel it. Feel the pain, you know? I don't really like this mainstream country shit. Stuff, or whatever it's called. I could put something else on.
He adjusted something and out came a blaring rap tune.
This more your speed. I bet they play this in J. Crew, too. It's really popular.
It's a bit loud.
Was all she could muster. She saw in his rear view two unblinking dead eyes locked upon her, and she looked out the window so quickly that the distinctiveness of that frightening image tumbled out of her mind from the whiplash. She kept looking out the window as if she found this industrial section of Queens contemplatively soothing. Every second of her silence seemed to be compounding some error she hadn't known she made. A sliver of her unthinking mind interrogated herself as to why she cared so much that her Uber driver might be thinking of her. But that was the autopilot of an ingrained defense mechanism, and reflecting upon where the thought came from made her feel worse. Amelia meant to say the other music had been fine, and then wanted to emphasize that it had been more than fine, but the words got mixed up. She realized that she'd gone blessedly unchallenged for some time. It was usually men, especially men she thought were just her platonic friends, who were the ones who landed their foot squarely in their mouths around her. Where she, for the most part, patiently bided her time until she could make a graceful, if somewhat apologetic, exit from the situation. A parallel thought was that she would like to get her phone back, but worried about how the timing of her request would be perceived. And then, more forcefully, okay, why does she care so much about what this guy thinks about her? And maybe she's just completely misreading the situation. She was the customer, after all, and, as if the allegation was proof enough, she just allowed what she perceived as his shift in tone to shame her.
Another customer to pick up.
Major said vacantly, tapping a screen in his nest of electronics.
No worries.
Amelia added a little pep to her voice to suggest that it was cool he'd make more money, and then resumed looking out the window. Amelia tried to catch a street sign as they turned off this major road, but she missed it. Amelia had no luck discerning the demographics of the neighborhood, which sent her all over the globe. There was a modest church in an unknown Asian language, a con-corner deli with Spanish signage, chains like Domino's and Kentucky Fried Chicken next to unique-sounding spots like a restaurant called Pimpolo's and a bakery called Purple Yam Cakes. She knew that Kentucky Fried Chicken wasn't a marker of neighborhood quality. The streets were packed, whole families and oodles of little kids enjoying the early summer night. A Carvel ice cream shop looked like it was profiting handsomely off the sticky night's heat. All the little fat kids diving face first into a cone or dripping ice cream on themselves. Amelia jerked her head back in abrupt surprise when she saw one woman harshly pull one of her ice cream doting kids by his collar, yell something at him that was certainly in a foreign language, and push a napkin into his face, while the siblings laughed with the "oh, you got in trouble" reaction universal across cultures.
"Would you mind if I got my phone back? It's probably pretty charged."
She didn't know why she felt the need to rationalize her request. With his right hand, he unplugged the phone and wordlessly handed it back to her.
"Thanks."
The Toyota Camry glided through side streets, making any number of turns.
"This is a nice car. Roomy."
Maybe she spoke too low because he didn't say anything, although it looked like he was focused on pulling up to the curb. She checked her Uber app and swallowed her disappointment that they were only in Jackson Heights, which was in central Queens, still a ways from Manhattan. Worst, it looked like they would be technically going backwards and dropping off this new rider, who appeared to live a bit east, off Northern Boulevard. Major kept the motor running. Amelia thought she heard him breathing hard through his nose, a kind of sigh. This struck her instantly as self-pitying. She clenched her cheeks and raised her eyebrows, a cousin of the eye roll, and went back to looking out the window. Amelia looked at the app again to see if it'd give any indication of where this new passenger might be. The app just read, "Meet Chrissy at the destination." Darkened form at the window and the click of the door unlocking. A raven-haired, olive-skinned youngish woman with a pronounced Meryl Streep nose stumbled back in mild, confused shock.
No worries. I can move over.
Amelia moved into the seat behind Major's.
Sorry.
The woman put her hands up and smiled graciously. She spoke with a subtle, unobtrusive accent. She could be from anywhere, from Chile to Russia. Chrissy lifted her eyebrows and kept a sort of smile plastered on her face in Amelia's direction as she buckled herself up.
"Chrissy?"
Major said, halfway between question and statement.
Yes.
They rode in silence, Chrissy occupied with her phone. Amelia strangely felt like she regretted missing out on whatever promise of warmth she intuited in Chrissy's initial entrance. Amelia resigned herself to the numbness on offer from her reunited phone, but looking at a phone while riding in the back of a car always gave her a foggy swimming sense in her brain and strain behind her eyes. Chrissy, based on the alacrity at which she typed and scrolled, seemed to have no problem. Amelia looked at her, or at least at the offered left side of her face, and felt an unaccountable sense of disappointment and, frighteningly, a searing moment of sheer isolation. She liked Chrissy's style. Light, dark-colored summer jacket. It had the homey look of a dependable go-to, and Amelia wasn't familiar with the brand. Within 10 minutes, they arrived at Chrissy's destination.
"You can pull up here. That's good."
Chrissy pointed to a large pre-war building that they were slowly approaching. Chrissy turned to Amelia and smiled as she began to unbuckle herself.
"Excuse me, where is your accent from? It's really quite..."
"Oh, you can tell. That's so funny. I was born in Serbia, but we moved here when I was 13. That's so funny you can tell I have an accent."
"Oh, I really like it. It's sophisticated sounding, if that makes any sense."
"You're too nice. Thank you very much. Have a nice night."
"You too."
Chrissy got out and disappeared into the lobby of her building. Amelia was gripped by a species of inexplicable loneliness. It was interesting to think that she'd just shared a back seat, a fairly intimate location, with a complete stranger, though she supposed she walked alongside and took the subway with complete strangers all the time and thought nothing of it. The constant churning of millions of new people is one of the things that people like about living in New York City, though often it left Amelia with a bitter aftertaste. She looked down at her knees, like there was something painful about seeing the mysterious lobby which had swallowed up Chrissy. Whether it was jealousy that Chrissy was safely at home, a lingering discomfort with Major, or that she was left with only sad speculation about who that interesting character might have turned out to be, had Amelia only taken the time to inquire, she didn't know. Amelia didn't ask about the coat, she realized, because of Major. She didn't want him listening to her or judging her. A blonde, rich girl at Columbia asking another girl about her stylish coat. But why the fuck did she care? And maybe she was completely, entirely wrong about the whole situation. No mind. Who cares? Major hadn't said a word to Chrissy throughout the entire trip. Doubt Chrissy cared. Doubt she even noticed. Major pulled out and continued westward. Amelia tracked him on the app, glad to see he appeared to be heading back toward Astoria Boulevard. But of course he would be. Why wouldn't he be?
What's a clipboard for?
Major asked, looking slightly over his right shoulder.
Oh, you moved. Can't see you. Forgot you were in the car, almost.
Just work stuff.
Amazing how nothing of what she was feeling came out in her anodyne response. Sometimes, Amelia was a mystery to herself. She could feel perfectly confident addressing strangers for donations for some far-flung charity, yet felt all blustery and flustered here, doing nothing in the backseat of a car. Her stomach was gurgly and upset. Some combination of hunger, indigestion, or nerves.
Oh, yeah? What kind of work were you doing?
His tone was good-natured and interested.
I raise money for a company, like a non-profit. It all goes to various charities.
Oh, like on the street? You one of those people asking people if they have a second time, like, hey, one quick question for you.
Yeah, that's me.
Speaking of work stuff, since you shared it with me, this is actually going to be my last day driving an Uber. Maybe I'll treat myself to one of those expensive Manhattan smoothies.
Oh, congratulations.
She thought darkly about a scenario where he just meant he was going to drive for Lyft instead.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, that's for sure.
What are you going to do after this?
Sky's the limit.
She couldn't see his face, but could imagine his satisfied expression, the smooth confidence, teeth exposed, as he spoke through a smile.
So what kind of charities were you raising money for out in the park in Queens?
I was working for a charity that helps provide, like, clean water and mosquito nets in Africa.
Oh, both clean water and mosquito nets in the same charity?
Well, clean water is the focus, but I think they also provide mosquito nets, or at least they did in the past.
Clean water sounds sexy. No one wants to think about mosquitoes, I guess. So how do you get paid?
Well, I get a cut of what I raise.
A good cut?
She laughed, said the following quickly, and tumbled over her words.
Well, good? I don't know about that. It's something, at least. It would probably be a better use of my time waitressing or something. I don't know. Everything can always be better, right?
She was relieved that whatever tension she'd imagined existed between them had evidently deflated.
I feel you. I bet you're good at it. You should ask for a raise if you're not sure it's a good cut.
Well, I mean, like, financially, I might make more money waitressing or something. I don't know. To be honest, I struggle with it sometimes because I feel like I am doing good work. But, like, at the end of the day, you know, it has its ups and downs.
I feel you.
The car stopped at a red light, one car in front of them. Major fiddled with his hands on the steering wheel, adjusting something fixed near the driving mirror. Then he adjusted the dial for the radio volume, although no sound came in either direction. He spun it all the way clockwise, which would be deafening had there been any music playing. Amelia leaned and saw the radio display. Once lit a shade of emerald green while music had been playing, now looked turned off, as did the rest of the strange electrical equipment by the dashboard.
So all that money goes for a good cause, I suppose?
Yeah, people need water. Well, I count myself as a good cause too, I guess. It helps me. You know, it helps me pay the bills and be alive.
Pay the bills. Didn't know why she said that exactly. She wasn't paying any bills with that money. Receipts at bars and restaurants were technically bills, though.
Ever get to go to Africa and see the handiwork?
No way would they ever do that. I'm just like the equivalent of a barista to them. Like a checkout girl.
So, explain it to me. Like, say someone gives like 50 bucks. What's that buy?
Amelia looked out the window again. She was benignly tired of explaining her job for an assortment of reasons. She wanted to be home. Talking about her job reminded her of how much she disliked it. This felt like additional unpaid work.
Well?
Amelia started, correcting herself not to sound tired or bored.
I don't really know about how the water system works, actually, but I think with $50, say at least half is going to directly to buy mosquito nets. And I think they're about $3 a net and last for a couple of years, so let's say that's, It's embarrassing. I'm having trouble with this math in my head. Okay, say it's like 8 nets. I mean, I'm not sure how many lives each net saves, but I know mosquito nets save thousands and thousands of children's lives. It's sad because, like, there's this impression that mosquito nets are, like, a white person thing because during the colonization years, the Europeans set up mosquito nets with insecticide. So, I know money always goes to education efforts, too, you know, to promote the use of these nets.
That extra information about the educational efforts seemed to trigger a stronger reaction than she'd expected. Really, any reaction was a stronger reaction than she'd expected. Major nodded furiously, short, pogoing nods like his head was on a spring, and met her eyes through the rearview mirror. The image of the previous stare came back to her, and whatever mounting discomfort she had diffused by swiftly looking out the mirror overtook her too quickly to be rationalized or suppressed. She looked away instinctively again, but couldn't help herself and snuck a peek back. His stare persisted. She looked away, down to her phone, which she didn't want to look at. Amelia hoped he asked no follow-up questions. While looking at her Uber app, she made a conspicuous look of focused, impatient concentration, as if she just received and was now envisioning the right response to an important email. They were just entering Astoria, still needed to go over the Triborough Bridge, go up Harlem River Drive or across town, and go up Broadway until they got to Inwood.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Traffic's bad tonight.
She muttered, eyes glazed distractedly on her phone. A united front of sorts, look occupied on the phone, while also offering diverting trivialities.
So, say I offered up like a $50 donation to your charity for you to show me those tiny little pink titties you have somewhere under those clothes. You'd take that, right? Because you'd be saving a lot of poor African kids' lives with that money. I mean, if you could convince them to use the nets and all, assuming they weren't too stupid, right? Like you said, they wouldn't even save themselves with the nets until you showed them the way.
Her insides, from her stomach all the way up to her chest, narrowed and constricted before she even processed what he'd said. A poisonous lump lodged in her throat. It tasted somehow like a confirmation, as if she'd known all along gasoline had been pumped into her stomach, and she'd only been waiting for something to serve as the match. Amelia swallowed hard. She felt small and terrified. Her instinct was to turtle up in panic, but something told her to go large with her outrage.
Okay, you need to pull this car over right now. Right now!
Am I wrong? You said it. You would save so many lives, right? Answer me. Wouldn't you be saving a ton of African children for only 50 bucks? You telling me your little pink, nasty, white little titties are worth dozens of little African children? That's what you're saying right now.
What the fuck is wrong with you? What are you even talking about? You don't know anything. You're whiter than I am. But why do you keep... Look, you just need to pull this car over. Right now. Pull this car over now. I'm canceling this ride.
Oh my God, you went there. You really went there. What are you saying right now? That is what you are saying right now, though, right? Your little titties are more important than a hell of a lot of young black lives, right? I got that part, though, right?
Through the blinding heat of her rage and panic, there was something like guilt and shame, something preternaturally triggered by the strength of his emotion, as if the depth of his indignation was proof of the righteousness of his position. There was some part of her worldview that needed to untangle how someone could be so persistently stubborn about something they were so bafflingly wrong about. She canceled the trip on Uber and listed her reason as driver misconduct. Amelia thought to threaten to call the police, but it caught in her throat. She wasn't sure if that was the best strategy or would only inflame him. She just needed to get out of the car. There had to be a way to dial the police through the Uber app, wasn't there? Amelia looked out the window frantically. She saw the elevated subway line of the N train and knew they were in Astoria. She knew this was a good, safe neighborhood, a place where someone would help her. They weren't driving that fast, maybe 30 miles an hour, and this, she panicked as she thought, was maybe the last chance to get out of the car before they got into Manhattan.
Let me out now! If not, I'm calling the cops. Right now. This is kidnapping at this point.
Little rich bitch crying because she'd rather let her poor black kids die than show her tiny little pink titties. You heard it here first, folks. You can't make this shit up. Should I show her that I actually have $50 somewhere on me? I think I actually got a literal 50. Bet she would do that thing those Asian cashiers do where you hand them a 50, and then they lift it up to the ceiling and look at it like you trying to pass off junk dollars or something. I even tried to play country music for this bitch, if you could believe it, but she wouldn't have none of it. She...
Amelia forced open her door. Oh God, whatever speed they were going seemed a lot faster when she saw the road blur past her, yellow lines appearing and reappearing so often as to be flickering in and out of existence. Between blinks, she saw herself launching from the car, attempting a roll, elbows hitting first and shattering, catapulting her into oncoming traffic, head flattened and emptied as thoroughly and completely as a cantaloupe caught in a vice.
You better close that door, bitch. I'm pulling over. Don't make me. You try to get the cops on me and you're gonna make me.
Major opened his glove compartment. She saw papers and items she couldn't make out. In the space of a panicked heartbeat, Amelia foresaw him, with one sleek, pre-planned motion, pull out a black gun and fire one shot, directly between her vacant, forever open eyes, blood trickling down into her mouth, turning her into nothing but garbage to be discarded. Amelia breathed the thought away. Major took out a stainless steel gravity knife and flicked open the 6-inch blade. Eyes completely off the road for a moment, he swiped the air in front of her with the blade. Cruel satisfaction mingled with excitement.
Now don't draw attention to us. See, I'm pulling over. I now need to drive a few blocks away from here because of your stupid ass. You stupid bitches always want the cops involved, always getting police involved, doing dumb shit, willing to get someone killed by police rather than talk.
Then, more to himself as he pulled off onto a side street and shook his head.
Can't have a conversation, can't work things out, just call the cops. I said words, only words. And then you go crazy and open my door on the fucking road, you crazy bitch.
And then, as if crazy bitch was insufficient to capture her evil, because if she was just crazy, then she couldn't be morally culpable, he muttered more fiercely and with rising conviction.
Stupid bitch. Fucking stupid rich white bitch.
Are you fucking kidding me? She was breathing smoke, simultaneously flabbergasted and body soured with fury. She almost spoke. Be careful, hers were the impulses of someone to whom violence was foreign, where confrontations end with words, affronted texts, or emails. Don't rile him.
Okay. Okay. We both got a little upset, okay?
Give me your phone.
They were on a desolate side street. She scanned and saw only parked, empty cars, darkened industrial businesses, and low-rise buildings without doormen or security. No one coming in or out. He stopped the car, double-parked. Full body turned toward her, knife in his right hand, seatbelt undone.
Give me the phone, then you can go.
Open the door now. No, he would grab her by the hair. She couldn't overpower him, and in the chaos, he'd slash her. He would imagine he was just trying to subdue her, and then as they flailed, he'd slash her and rationalize it by thinking that stupid bitch should have just listened, shouldn't have. Everything that was going to happen was to be blamed on what she shouldn't have done.
I need my phone! How else am I gonna get home?
Do you even understand why what the fuck you said before was fucked up? You talking about how you saved African kids' lives like you some fucking hero or something. Like I should be on my knees, kissing your feet about how great you are after the way you treated me. And then what you was really saying is you full of shit. You let all those little poor African kids die rather than show your nasty little titties. Like your tits are so precious and you wouldn't show them to me even if it saved dozens or hundreds of little kids' lives. Do you have any idea how fucked up that is?
She didn't know whether it was better to show she was listening, or whether eye contact was another capriciously perceived offense. Avoiding his eyes came easier, so Amelia looked indistinctly in his direction, always on the lookout for, please God, someone walking by. No one was walking on this shitty dead end.
This is Astoria. You ain't in fucking Hollis or some shit. Go walk to the train. It's like two stops from Manhattan.
I don't know where I am.
Your dumb ass can figure it out. People will give rich blonde girls directions. Situation was reversed. They let me die out here.
Why do you need my phone?
Bitch, don't ask me why. Why do you care? Why? Because I'm telling you why. It's the least you can fucking do after you ruin my fucking day. You say all this offensive shit and you can't take a joke, then pull all this shit, open my door while I'm driving? What? I'm supposed to let you just call the police on me the second you get out of this fucking car? I know you gonna call the police on me, report me as some shit, even though I didn't do nothing but protect myself.
If Amelia could believe his assurances, she'd give him her phone. Don't lose your life over a phone. Already, the quotidian privations of the real world resurfaced, became, for a tiny, reassuring moment, her prominent focus. Let reassembling her contacts be the worst of her worries. Anticipating that as her sole worry was tantalizing nectar.
So you're robbing me then?
Then to soft pedal, as if explaining the importance of his actions.
Look, okay, that makes this a robbery. I think this is technically an armed robbery.
Major shook his head, then more fiercely looked away at her for a moment as if she became repulsive, shook his head with a look as if she couldn't get any more ridiculous, any more outrageous.
Deal's off.
No, look. I'm sorry. I'll leave the phone as I'm leaving, okay? Please? Just as I'm leaving, I'll leave the phone behind, okay? I didn't understand.
Live with your words. Deal's off.
Amelia continued consoling him, practically believing it herself that she needed to atone for something she'd said or done.
I'm sorry. You're right. I don't know what it's like to be afraid of the cops being called on you, okay? I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. It's not something I could ever understand.
Oh, no. Listen to this now.
He started up. It was as if he was destined to become increasingly angry with her, and everything she said would be willfully interpreted to escalate toward the ineluctable conclusion. Major placed his hand on the gear shift. Amelia pushed her door open while also kicking it open, having become terrified for some reason that the door would be too heavy for her to quickly get out. Major lunged over the back seat and grabbed her on her right shoulder with his left hand, strong enough to stop her in her tracks and drag her back to the seat. Amelia squirmed and pivoted her wrists. "Get off of me!" Her shirt gripped in his left hand, her toward him, and with his free right hand, popped open his front door. Her shirt gripped in his left hand, pulled her toward him, and with his free right hand, popped open his front door. Amelia tried to get her fingers underneath to loosen his grip, and was immediately horrified at how overpowered she was. If his grip remained intact, he could hop over to the back seat, and then she'd have nowhere to go. And then she could only kick her feeble flamingo twig legs, and that's when, yes, he'd stab her then, in the stomach. Again, 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 again. She could see the stupid surprise on her face when it became clear she was going to fucking die back here, ignominiously and alone, to the tune of the deadening thuds of the pounded flesh and bone that were once her. Perhaps realizing that she'd have an opportunity, however brief, to escape out the opposite door if he tried to run to the driver's side to get into the back seat, he moved his hand up to her hair and wrenched back, advanced his body forward to squeeze between the console to get to the back seat. The knife was still in his right hand. "Watch the knife, watch the knife. Bite his left hand," she thought. "Go for his eyes," and without thinking, she launched a strike. The shot was lucky. Very easily, she could have missed the mark, made contact with just her brittle wrist or the little fingers that had never curled properly to throw a punch. But the phone she held smashed hard into his nose as he attempted to force his way to the back seat. Amelia dropped the phone as he swung wildly with his knife. Part of her couldn't believe it. He'd actually tried to slash her with a knife. Had the angle been different, her face would be gashed open. There was no going back from that. While she'd known before that this had already entered an unalterable nightmare realm, now she really, absolutely knew it. Amelia lunged through the door. In mid-flight, she thought the car was somehow still moving, expected to hit the pavement and feel every tooth shatter as she ricocheted into an oncoming semi, but they'd been blessedly stationary. She landed inartfully on her right side, winced at the sinister vibration in her knee as she made contact, but immediately got up and ran in the street. Amelia ran as fast as she could, never looking back. She couldn't handle seeing him gaining on her, and became hysterical with inflamed, diseased thoughts that told her that moment she turned her head, that's when a car would come careening down the street straight through her. Amelia ran and ran, turned several blocks. Now some cars were driving past her. She ran past a few people, some elderly, saw a young, weak-looking white man walking an ugly dog. She was saying help, but not screaming it. Now she should stop and scream, and she did so until she became aware of the burning in her lungs, so unused to what they were being asked to do. Someone was coming toward her, an older Latino man wearing a classy hat, an elderly, frail Latina behind him, looks of concern on both their faces. The weak white man with the dog looked at her with alarm, struggling to pull his combative animal forward, saying something to the animal as if to convince it to relent so he could come over to see how he could help. She went toward them, panting, now just saying, "Please help." Major and his car were nowhere to be seen. She heard a knock at her door. She wasn't expecting anyone, although packages sometimes came at odd times, although usually not this late. Furrowing her brows as she looked through the peephole, she sort of recognized this guy. A young, smiley, fair-skinned man who was ill-served by his attempt at a beard. He held an iPhone in his hand. Chrissy opened the door partway, her foot wedged in between, no part of her face clearly visible in the shadows. It hadn't been hard for Major to gain entry to the apartment building. He just had to wait between the unlocked first door and the locked second door that opened into the lobby. An elderly Asian man and a Latina woman with two small kids either looked at him warily while they walked through the lobby or pretended not to notice him. But what he counted on was that species of gentrifying younger resident who enjoyed making a show of opening doors for unfamiliar working-class people. A few minutes of waiting and some such Hayden or Asher or Bowden or Miles entered the building and held the door open for him.
"Thanks, brother,"
Major had said. This Atticus or Aiden or Ledger or Salinger received this tokenized form of payment nonchalantly, as was the only way he could. But he warmed inside, reassured of his enlightened goodness.
"Sorry to bother you, miss, but I believe you left your phone in my car. You took an Uber with me earlier, if you remember,"
Major said, still in the hallway.
Thank you."
She turned her head toward the recesses of her apartment, as if wanting to check something while he stood there. She'd have known if she lost her phone. She was sure she still...
"Could you wait?"
"Sorry, ma'am. I just came back to give you the phone. I'm double parked. Is it okay if I just give it to you and just run?"
"Sorry. Okay, let me... Yeah. Thanks so much. You're the best. But I actually think..."
He barreled through, kicked the door shut behind him, and there was a knife to her throat.
"Oh my God. Oh my God."
She'd had a bad feeling. His affected language. Why had she even partly opened the door? She hadn't been thinking that the brutal world she found herself in was one that would ever show up to her door. Hot tears dripped down her face, and she closed her eyes, shivering, shaking.
"No one else here, right? No one else here?"
"No, please."
"You dumb Nazi bitch. Expecting me to be your fucking delivery boy? This ain't even your phone. Or you just so used to getting shit for nothing from people that you just take whatever's given to you. No questions asked."
Eyes closed, throat full of mucus and tears. Paralyzed. "Please, take what you want. You can take anything in my apartment, please. Please don't take me to the bedroom. Please, 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 please just take what you want and leave. Please let there be a morning where she cries and yells at herself for being so stupid. Not a morning for an STD test, followed by a lifetime of sobbing, shame, and anguish, an inability to go outside, to be around men, to be unprotected and always afraid. God, please, no. She couldn't imagine it. She couldn't allow it. To be raped. Thinking those words, even thinking those words, that possibility, stretched her stomach and made it want to explode. Oh, God. The thought, the possibility of what this man might intend for her opened up new dimensions of screaming, squirming hell. She urgently had to move her bowels.
"Please, please."
She couldn't stop shaking, couldn't open her eyes.
"Dumb bitch. You think you could just close your eyes, cry a little bit, put on a show, and that'll mean you want a dumb, stupid bitch? Were you surprised, shocked, that I could say miss and ma'am? Should I have done a little dance for you?"
"Breathe. Breathe." Chrissy listened to what he said, tried to mentally steady herself on his words. He was aggrieved about something, but there was a misunderstanding. He was confused.
"I think maybe you have the wrong person. I'm sorry for whatever someone has done to you."
She persisted, even though he was talking over her now, increasingly agitated.
"Please, maybe I can help you find the person you're looking for."
"Oh, what was that now? Oh no, oh no. I got the right person. Or are there other Nazi bitches back there?"
She forced herself to look at his uncomprehending, severe face. That look. That look was an absolute, an immovable object, suffused with intractable rage. She persisted, suppressing what she knew must be true. He was crazy, and she was doomed. His path was an avenue that led to only one destination: confrontation. Chrissy could only fight flee or scream. Then everything happened too quickly, as he was punching her, and she gagged as he must have hit her windpipe, his hands to her throat. No, her throat already torn, her hands too late in shooting up to defend herself, and the knife left her throat as she staggered in disbelief. The knife plunged hard into her chest, and she looked down, moaned, and cried. The blood hot both in her open throat and while dribbling down to her chest, the indignity of disfiguration reaching her fully before even the pain. Her vision narrowed. She groped at her chest to pull the knife free, but she was so weak. She must try. She tugged on it, but he swatted her hands away so easily. She could register the brusqueness of the hand that pushed against her frayed neck. Her face, nothing but a prop to help leverage himself to pull the knife out of what was once her body. And she registered that the knife was coming back. She willed herself to move out of the way, but her body no longer complied with her wishes. Her last thought of her own framed, immobile face ballooned to a size that became the entire world. Her dying brain wordlessly screaming for her to take action. Amelia dreaded leaving McDonald's. She gave herself a pass for eating this shit because she was fucking starving. It was quick, and chicken tenders, her favorite since childhood, were comforting. She'd forgotten how good they were. She gave an older homeless black man with a walker a dollar as she left, as he held the door open with a God bless you. Amelia hadn't known what to expect at the police station. She'd never filed a police report, never really had any interaction with police, except hearing sirens blow past her up where she lived in Inwood, or seeing them in the subways or clomping around on horseback for the tourists in Central Park. She'd expected to be caught up in some bureaucratic machine, waiting for hours in a waiting room while police ignored her in favor of gossip and coffee. But the police station wasn't that bad. Detective Conti, a mustachioed, creased-faced officer in his mid-50s, was confident they'd be able to get Major's full identity and address from Uber. Detective Conti's central casting appearance was heartening. "These Uber incidents happen more than you'd think," he told her. "If you knew how many app-based cleaning service workers pilfered jewelry or cash or swiped a check for later forgery, you'd never use an app cleaning service again." Task Rabbit, more like Task Bandit, the cops called it. God, how stupid she'd been. Just sitting there quietly while alarm bells had been screaming off around her the whole trip. She just hadn't wanted to believe it. It was as if she'd absorbed and unwittingly prioritized a kind of aspirational code of conduct over her own safety and well-being. Only in hindsight did she realize how outrageously stupid it'd have been to credit polite ignorance over her own instincts. They let her use a laptop to track her phone, but it just showed up approximately where she left it, in his car in Astoria. Conti wasn't surprised. Anyone with half a brain would have chucked it, thrown it down a sewer grate. Amelia selected the option to wipe her phone clean, just to be safe. Other than her home phone number back in Maryland, she didn't remember any other numbers. It took her about 80 minutes to get home via subway. She didn't know whether it was a good sign, or that not navigating the crush of people during the long transfer to the A train at the Port Authority Times Square station was just as exhausting and annoying as ever. People walking too slow, dilly-dallying with their phones, tourists with oversized maps pointing until someone blared at them to watch where they were swinging their hands, the literal sub-street level preachers yelling about how only through the word of Christ can your life be redeemed. It was all the same. The world hadn't changed. Normality was reasserting itself. Amelia slumped her body against and theatrically pushed open her apartment door. "You wouldn't believe my fucking day," she offered as she came in. She was half hoping her roommates, Shannon and Amanda, would gather around and start asking questions, glad to be interrupted with whatever they'd been doing. Hopefully, something that invited interruption, like gorging the mindless junk food reality shows the three of them collectively watched to unwind. But no one greeted her. Amelia found it remarkably anxiety-inducing to be away from home without her phone. Unable to contact anyone, unable to look anything up, her contacts and the wider world all one big blank void. She'd read articles before about how lovely it is to disconnect from your smart device and reconnect with yourself. Maybe when it's your choice, and when you knew when you were reconnecting, and when you knew there wasn't any pressing obligations. Not so much when the details for your friends and family were lost. If Amelia had her phone, she could have texted her roommates on the subway ride home, known where they were. Amanda, who bartended sporadically at night, was likely at work or just gone out. Shannon was more of a homebody, though she often studied at the nearby Starbucks on Dickman Street. The light by the front door was on. They often left it on as a courtesy to each other, because who wants to walk into a pitch-black apartment in Inwood? Amelia could always hear the imagined bitching of some of the more ardent environmentalists she worked with if they heard about the superfluous waste of energy. Lights were actually on throughout the apartment. Television was off. The wide black living room coffee table where three sets of legs often rested now spotless. Shannon's doing. She was the punctilious one. Always dusting and scrubbing. The others in her quiet debt. Their three identically sized glorified closets for rooms ran next to each other on the same side of the wall. All their doors were closed, with light visible below Shannon's. Amelia was just about to gently knock on Shannon's door when she heard Shannon say, muted through her door, "Hey, come on in." Amelia leaned against the door in fatigued relief. Shannon was quiet. She needed to be eased into Amelia's tale of hysterics and woe. If dramatic Amanda were here, Amelia would have led off with a bang, repeating her "you wouldn't believe my fucking day" for their benefit, and waiting for the questions to drop. Amanda's volubility converted everyone else's personality into lesser versions of her own. It'd be more fun, if that's the right word, to tell the story in Amanda style. But honestly, she was too exhausted to do that. She half wanted to just go to sleep and let them find out tomorrow. Why she wanted to even bother, she wasn't sure. She didn't need her outrage and disgust corroborated or reaffirmed. By telling the story, perhaps, she'd distance herself from it, have it already be a part of her ancient mythic history, a "did you ever hear that crazy shit that happened to Amelia?" rather than a current tragedy that needed processing. Amelia opened Shannon's door. Amelia's eyes burned, and with each blink, they beckoned her to stay closed. She couldn't process what lay before her. It was Shannon's minimalist room, lights on. The little black lamp that Shannon kept at her desk was on, as it always was. But Shannon wasn't sitting at her desk. She was standing on the far right side of her bed, rigid and at attention. Shannon didn't wear makeup, but if she had, it'd be smudging. Amelia could see her eyes were rouge and puffy, a face recently distorted with tears. What did not compute was the reason for all this. Someone behind Shannon, one arm wrapped around her upper chest, as if Amelia had unwittingly walked into a hostage situation inside a bank. Someone taking cover behind a human shield to avoid unseen snipers.
"So this is how the colonizers live, huh? You've taken over Harlem, and now you're taking all of Uptown."
Major said distractedly, almost obligatorily. Then,
"Don't move. We're just going to talk, okay?"
Amelia saw the same knife as before in his right hand. Not against, but close enough to Shannon's throat. Amelia had to steady herself just to stand upright, the waves of shock, nausea, and horror upending her. She wanted to lurch forward and puke while crazily wanting only to lay down and sleep. No, this couldn't be happening. Even though it undeniably was, even when she accepted it was truly happening, her body rebelled. No, this can't be happening. Just go to bed and wake up and deal with it later. Future Amelia can deal with it. the same strategy for how she dealt with a bad day in college. Just nap through it, as if her body applied this one-size-fits-all solution to whatever lay before it. She was going to puke, or shit, and that's what kept her upright. He wasn't as loose as he was before, if loose could be properly applied to a violent lunatic. But before, Major had been fluid, a snap and natural rhythm to his words that served to, partially, conceal their bite. That was absent now, and there was a kind of stupefied withdrawal on his face.
I had to kill that other racist bitch in the car. With a Nazi accent?
The way he said bitch, though, didn't seem hateful. And he spoke as if he didn't even believe what he was saying. There was a glazed look to him as he spoke.
It was your fault. You made me. And you were a lot worse than her, so it was not fair that it happened to her when it was your fault. If she had to die, you deserved to die twice. Three times even.
Amelia kept her hands up, fingers wide and spread apart in the universal gesture of easy does it. She could spend a lifetime trying to unravel where he was mentally. There was always that insistent belief that he could somehow be reasoned with, if only she could find a hook to disabuse himself of these assumptions he was making. She wanted to point out that, if he hadn't noticed, Shannon was mixed-race Latina. Could that buy Shannon any clemency? Or was she as irredeemably racist as any other white girl, as if her white half, like a creeping oil slick, smothered and overtook all it came into contact with? No, don't attempt it. There was a cruel fascination in dealing with someone crazy. But take him at his word. He killed someone. Amelia knew he couldn't be reasoned with.
Okay. What do you want to talk about?
Amelia regretted that. She had called his bluff. He had nothing to talk about, and it showed. Major lived, she surmised, convinced so absolutely of his own correctness, a kind of amplified version of the insular self-affirming bubble as everyone else, just missing some key ingredient that allowed him to function as semi-normally as everyone else. Why couldn't he just go home and post about the stupid, racist, rich, blonde bitch he had to deal with? Get his online affirmations. What seemed to compel him tonight, now, after all his years of living, to drive his life off the cliff? She can never know.
Can you let Shannon go? She has nothing to do with this.
Amelia was looking for the opening to mention she was Puerto Rican.
Nothing to do with it. You should have seen her when she saw my ugly ass knocking on the door, telling her you were in trouble and that I found your phone. You knew she wanted it. Just spit in my face.
Okay.
Wrong move. Major had made his decision, and anything she said, any facts she offered would be grossly misinterpreted to serve his ends. She could offer money or to debase herself, to flash him. That's what he wanted, hadn't it? No. Where would that lead? That'd lead to nothing good. Keep her distance. She could run. She was close enough to Shannon's door to run. Close it behind her. Make a run for it. That idea disappeared. She couldn't abandon Shannon. She'd brought this, however inadvertently, to their door.
What do you want, then? Do you want me to apologize? Do you want me to... You were talking about seeing my tits before in the car, remember?
It wasn't possible to run and arm herself with a knife or frying pan. The second she left the room, he would kill Shannon. Or was he bluffing? Was he truly capable of murdering somebody? With so many emotions exploding inside her, Amelia could still identify the singular weight of guilt over that sweet woman in the car with the cool jacket. The woman who could have been her friend.
Don't you even try.
There was nowhere to go. This would end with him attacking her. Was Shannon a lost cause? Should Amelia flee? What should she do?
Our roommate is gonna be here any second with her cop boyfriend. Any second he's gonna be here. And he has a gun. An off-duty gun that that he always has on him.
Amelia was panicking now. Time was running out. She needed to. Either a momentary pause at hearing about another person coming over, or a freeze frame of excitement at Amelia's sexualized debasement. Either way, there was an opening, and Shannon bent, pivoted her hips, and turned into Major, right thumb hooking into his eyeball. Major screamed as Shannon's thumb found a groove, but immediately he palmed her entire face into his left hand, and, with her momentum used against her, launched her into the dresser in the far corner. Amelia was moving before she was thinking, making to grab something to defend herself and rush forward to take advantage of the surprise. Some insane part of her wanted to grab a pillow, as if this was just nothing more than a game, and panic mixed with chaos as she couldn't find anything to grab. Should we run out to the kitchen and get a knife? But instead, she made a split-second decision, grabbing what she could. Major was a beat behind, refusing to believe this blurred vision, willing it to vanish. Left hand to his eye, finding blood. His vanity and fury reminded him of the knife he held in his right hand, grip tightening around the handle as if he were wringing the necks of those two spoiled cunts. Which to kill first? The stupid blonde Betty bitch running toward him just asking to be stabbed in the stomach, or the entitled ugly bitch who just attacked him? Major turned toward Shannon just as she turned back toward him, cracking him in the forehead with the heavy textbook she'd grabbed from the dresser. That was a pain he could press through, that wouldn't stop him. Although his head jarred swingingly and vertigo bloomed inside his brain, he meant to continue forward, but lost his balance despite knowing there was no reason to. He could take it. That was nothing. Then he felt a violent pinprick in his neck, the equivalent of a needle for a blood test, but a needle that didn't stop, that continued and spread, and then blood was rushing from his neck. He put his hand up and swung at the shape that he knew would be the blonde bitch, but the other woman was at his waist, and he was screaming, screaming. The vision that had been watery and blurred in his right eye was now entirely gone. Major felt the pressure of the thin ballpoint pen that invaded his eye before he felt the pain. A pain so brilliant and incendiary, it reduced him to unknown wavelengths of hysterics, and he swung wildly and made contact and ran galloping forward, screaming. Major sensed one of the girls falling down, and he thought he imagined the blonde Becky bitch kicking her tiny little rich girl feet in vain, disbelievingly groping at her torn throat. Like, how could violence befall a pretty rich white girl? And kept running forward out of the room, the pen sticking out of his eye, finally falling to the floor. He felt warm, viscous fluid dribble down his cheek. Nothing coherent registered when he attempted to open his damaged eye, and he groped and stumbled out of the apartment, more on instinct than anything.
Amelia!
Shannon put her hands to Amelia's forehead, then tugged the comforter off her bed, sending pillows careening to the floor. She pushed a corner of the comforter hard against Amelia's forehead to stop the bleeding.
Here, just breathe. You're okay? Oh God, is it bad?
Amelia tried to breathe.
Tell me, is it bad? Is it bad? Tell me, is it bad? You have to tell me. You have to tell me.
Amelia was blubbering. She saw the blood pool and soak into the comforter.
Oh God. Oh God.
You just got a little cut on the forehead.
Oh God, he's gonna come back.
In between blinks, she could picture it happening, clear as day. Shannon speaking one moment and then spitting up blood the next. A knife erupting out of her front like a shrimp on a queue. Major over her shoulder and lifting her off the ground like it was nothing.
I locked and barricaded the door. Police are on the way. That was smart about Amanda. I bet she already wishes she had a strong cop boyfriend. She's going to like that story.
Eventually, Amelia found the courage to look at the mirror. No matter what she saw, she would have cried. It wasn't nothing, as Shannon told her, or barely anything, as Amanda would later say. It was something enough to make her mother cry when she saw it. It was a deep gash on the center right portion of her forehead. She viewed it somehow, however illogically, as a signifier of her own failure. Shannon, who'd done everything right, came out unscathed. Disfiguration, Amelia subconsciously felt and never articulated, was her punishment. She'd thought of jesting that this whole fiasco confirmed that the pen was mightier than the sword, but never said it. Somehow, rather, she felt a deranged paranoia about the optics of two rich white Columbia girls beating off a working-class sub-intellect with an overpriced textbook called Feminism and Politics 3rd Edition and a fancy, sharp pen. "Hey, Amelia, no judgment at all. Just passing this along. You might want to take a look." That was the second text she got in the last couple of minutes, from a different friend than the first. She'd kind of blown off the first text because, well, she had no reason. She blew off most demands upon her time these days, although she wasn't filling it with much of anything else. She'd taken a break from her job, basically quitting it without using those words. She'd taken the rest of the semester off, both with the school's and her parents' consent. She needed a break. Things weren't going badly, she told herself. She didn't really need to convalesce or anything, the word used by the doctor who stitched up her wound, a word which brought to mind images of hysterical or suicidally depressed women dragooned off to a colony in Florida for fresh air and sunshine. It wouldn't last long, this break. Amelia didn't like going out alone, for any reason, but that would pass. That would pass, she told herself uneasily. She hated being on the subway, surrounded by all these people. And she couldn't admit, wasn't allowed to admit it. But young, cocksure, unintelligent men made her extremely anxious and uncomfortable. She was terrified, she knew. It was as if she'd become infected. Infected with a virus she couldn't bring to anyone's attention. She was terrified of being alone. Of being alone with men, which would have a certain squadron of feminist females nodding in emphatic agreement. But more specifically, being around lower class men of a certain type. Their nervous glares, shaking heads. So she left it at men, to get the approval and support she needed, hoping the darker thoughts would pass. Amelia saw the first and second texter both sent the same link. "Hey, Amelia, you might need to see this," read the first text. She clicked the link, and the article opened. "Backseat Becky knows what African charities are good for. We know we overuse that term Becky for these basic bitches, but there really is no other word that quite captures that blend of caucasity, entitlement, aggressive victimhood, and so she's like," in that high-pitched, so over this tone, you just know this Becky be using day and night. Plus, Backseat Becky has such a nice alliterative ring to it. There was Amelia, clear and bright, extra illuminated, extra white even, as it were, in Major's backseat, a view from a camera at his dashboard. As Amelia spoke, Major made eyes with the camera, a silent emphasis on when, apparently, she said something worthy of secret derision. "Now, Backseat Becky's worthless opinions on gentrification, $10 smoothies, and country music is bad enough," the article continued. "But Becky reveals her true Beckitude when discussing the importance of the African charities she works for. Important in that said charities put the B in Becky for bankroll." A clip of Amelia in the backseat, voice higher and more abrasive than she imagined her voice to be, perhaps a product of the tinny phone speakers, or just rarely hearing her own voice outside her own head.
"Well, I get a cut of what I raise."
"A good cut?"
"Well, good? I don't know about that. It's something, at least. It would probably be a better use of my time waitressing or something. I don't know. Everything can always be better, right?"
Major makes eyes at the camera, a little smile as he looks back at the road.
"So, All the money goes for a good cause, I suppose?
His eyes go back to the camera.
Yeah, people need water. Well, I count myself as a good cause, too.
Do we need to mention that this Becky goes to Columbia? What, you think she's slumming it at City College? Nah, see, Becky wants to get paid. Now look, we ain't trying to knock people, try... Amelia couldn't read or watch anymore. Amelia scanned down to the bottom of the article. What she was about to do was a terrible idea. In the best of times, you don't want to do this on any article that features you. But she couldn't help herself. She wondered if she'd recognize a familiar voice in the comment section.
I hope you enjoyed. Quick question. Do you love animals? As written by J.R. Hamantashen and performed by Olivia Steele, Rissa Montañez, Paul J. McSorley, Nick Goroff, Eric Peabody, Danielle Hewitt, and Heather Thomas. On to the shows. Longtime resident Otis Gyrie has his very own show here on our network, Scary Stories Told in the Dark, which you can hear every Sunday night. We also have Eric Peabody's Horror Hill, a podcast dedicated to some of our deeper and darker tales. We hope you check him out. And Drew Blood's Dark Tales airs Fridays, featuring some Southern down-home horror. And don't forget to check out The Fear from the Heartland Archives, featuring more than 120 episodes. Well, friends, our weekly descent into the depths has just about come to a close. But before we go, I'd like to take a moment to thank you for joining us for tonight and remind you to take a moment to stop by our iTunes page and leave Chilling Tales for Dark Nights a 5-star review and a kind word. And follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram if you haven't already. And of course, subscribe to us on YouTube, where you can find an archive of our work going back to 2012. And consider signing up as a patron at our website, ChillingTalesForDarkNights.com, to show your support and get all of our content ad-free. I'm your host of the evening, Steve Taylor, and it's been a pleasure. Tune in again next week when we once again turn off the lights and turn on the dark. Sweet dreams, listener. Sweet dreams.
What's up, fools? Main Event Jey Uso here from the WWE. When it's just me between matches, it's day one-ish. And that means it's Chumba time. With hundreds of casino-style games and new titles arriving weekly, there's always something fresh to try at Chumba Casino. The daily boosts make it even more fun. And have me about to get them all during my downtime. Ready for a fun way to chill out and enjoy a few minutes for yourself? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.